Hello, I'm Francine, host of Coping to Care, a podcast series sponsored by Blue Sea Care that features guests who share their expertise and life experiences to empower our loved ones in the community. Our aim is to serve as a relevant, genuine, and entertaining resource to help you triumph over the seismic changes resulting from COVID-19. Today, we'd like to welcome screenwriter, humorist, and actor Doug Chamberlain. Among Doug's many accomplishments is Toy Story 2, which earned him an Outstanding Achievement Award for writing in an animated feature production. After working as a screen and television writer for nearly 20 years, Doug took on a new role to teach his craft as a guest instructor in the UK. Most recently, when he and his wife Caroline came back from England, they decided to research and write about one of their favorite trails for hiking. And they wrote the popular book, The Complete Hiker's Guide to the Backbone Trail. And it's the 69-mile hiking trail, which follows the spine of the Santa Monica Mountains from Los Angeles to Point Mugu, California. Finally, Doug is busy working on a new podcast called Absurdity Now. Welcome, Doug.
Hi there. Hello, Francine. Thanks for having me.
Sure. I'm excited to have some good humor coming from you and your experiences. You know, when you wrote Toy Story 2, what was the process to make it funny?
Well, you know, there's a lot of things you go through to try to make something funny. Usually when you're writing a story like that, the best bet, the thing that you can really rely on the most is to try to focus on the characters. Because basically, almost everything is funnier if you have the context of who was doing it. You know, like you could say, "Oh, I saw a guy walking down the street, and he slipped on a banana peel or something like that." And you might say that was kind of funny. But if it was your Uncle Bob who did it, and everybody knows Uncle Bob is a guy with a big mouth who's always telling everybody else to look out for safety, and then he slipped on the banana peel, obviously it makes it a lot funnier because you just know who it was. That it happened to, assuming, of course, that he didn't get hurt when he slipped on the banana peel in the first place. But yeah. So we focused a lot on the characters to try to find humor in each of the characters and how they would have a different take on whatever, you know, potential problem would come along. You know, it's funny, though, you asked me about the process to make it funny. But in that situation, which was similar to a lot of other Hollywood-type gigs, working in places like that, like for studios, for example, isn't really a very funny environment, right? It's a weird place to have to try to be funny. In fact, it's a strange place to even be looking for humor because you're trying to tell anecdotes or funny stories or even just jokes to you know people sitting in there in Armani suits behind a giant desk, and they're basically sitting there thinking, is this worth $40 million? You know, $50 million is at stake. Is this funny enough for that? So that kind of takes the fun out of just telling somebody something funny if they're sitting there thinking about how much money it would cost. So you have to sort of try to look for humor even in an environment like that. And in the case of actually specifically just for Toy Story 2, there was a real tight deadline. And so my partner, Chris, and I, we were working at like 3 a.m. and stuff on it. They put us up in a hotel, but the hotel was about an hour's drive away from Pixar across this really long, one of those big, long San Francisco bridges. So we just wound up sleeping half the time in our office at Pixar. And I had bought like a really cheap, cheesy, inflatable mattress, like the kind of thing you see in a pool, you know, one of those things. Right. And I would just be sleeping on that half the time in the office at night. And so, again, not the best situation to try to find humor. Now, looking back on it, the actual situation itself was ridiculous, but at the time, it was hard for us to feel funny when, you know, you're getting 3 hours of sleep on a plastic mattress in an office somewhere. But anyway, so we mainly look for the humor in the characters, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, at least with a few hours, I feel that you get slap happy, and maybe you do come up with some good content when you're tired.
Sometimes you do, and then sometimes you come up with something that you fall on the floor thinking is genius, and then the next morning with some sleep, you hear it again, and you go, huh? What, was that supposed to be funny?
Yeah, right. So I know you've done a lot of writing, and the most recent podcast I hear, or the most recent project I hear you're working on is your own podcast called Absurdity Now, and how did you get the idea for that? And where did you find all the hours of good humor? Because I know that you've written a lot for that so far.
Yeah, I really have. I've been digging, digging everywhere I can find to sort of think of the different humorous things in my life. So it sort of comes from two different sources. And I think this is true of almost anybody who finds anything in life funny. There's two different ways it comes from. One of them are stories, you know, anecdotes, things that happened to me or other people, I guess, in the past. And a lot of times they seem funny now, but they weren't funny then. And then the other place I try to find humor that isn't a story is just every now and then I'll get sort of a little odd little epiphany, something that kind of makes me go, aha, you know what? That's really ridiculous. It's something that happens in life that maybe happens under our noses that we kind of knew was funny, but didn't really know on the surface was funny. And that's more of a topic instead of a story. And I can give you a couple examples of those if you want.
Sure.
About how that kind of thing works. So like with anecdotes. So usually the problem I have with anecdotes, and I think almost anybody, even someone looking for something to chuckle about in these not particularly funny times right now, is that it often it's really hard. I think it takes a real sophisticated mind to be able to see the humor real time when it's actually happening, something bad is happening to them. Mm-hmm. And I am not that sophisticated, but I met somebody who was one time. My wife and I got to meet a group of Buddhist monks, and I think these guys were I think they were from Tibet, and our church had hosted this group of monks to come for a week and build a sand mandala there. And for people who don't know what a sand mandala is, these guys spend, and women too, I think, can do this also. I don't mean to sound like it's only guys, but I think in this case it happened to be only guys. They spend a whole week just painstakingly, meticulously building this painting made of bits of colored sand. It was thousands and thousands of bits of colored sand that they slowly, steadily put into this thing. And then as soon as they're done with it, they just take it. They don't put it in a museum or hang it on the wall. They just take it and knock it outside, and all the sand just blows away. And the whole point of it is to stay in the moment, you know, that it's not about making something that's going to last forever. It's about actually experiencing the process of doing it. So they were there to build this mandala. And when it was over, everybody got a chance to meet them and say hello. And so there was a line of folks going up and greeting the head monk, and he looked like exactly what you'd expect to look like. He had a head on a robe, and he had a shaved head and all that. And so my wife steps up to him, and he bows to her, and out of respect, she bows back to him. The problem is they bowed at the same time, and they immediately clunked their heads together like Larry and Curly. And I guess this is probably an occupational hazard that they teach you about when you decide to become a monk. It's probably like on the first day they say, the first rule is don't bow at the same time or you'll clunk your heads together. So, and it was a pretty good thunk. I mean, I heard it, you know, it's like whack.
Oh my gosh.
That's and this guy looks up and he looks dazed for about only a half a second. And I'm of course mortified. And he just bursts into hysterical laughter. He's just like, this is great. You know, the world just played a trick on me, and isn't it wonderful? So he was able just to see immediately that this is hilarious. And if it had been me, I would have been either annoyed or worried or something. But this guy immediately is like, you know, this is funny. And another example of something happening to me that really was obviously silly, but at the time I didn't think it was funny because I was in such a sour mood, and only later occurred to me that I probably shouldn't have been in such a sour mood, was, again, it involves my wife a little bit. She and I, when we were just getting to know each other, we took a trip to Paris together. And on the last night of the trip, we went to had dinner at the Moulin Rouge. Oh boy. And I was feeling all good about that. And about 4 hours later, I got violently ill and threw up throwing up in the hotel room. Oh, and no. the next morning we had to take this long flight back to, America. And we went to De Gaulle Airport, and my stomach felt like it had shards of glass in it. I just felt awful, and it was too hot in the airport, and our flight was delayed, and everything was going wrong, and I just was cranky and miserable and worried. And I thought, oh, we're going to miss our flight, and what if I get sick again, blah, blah, blah. So we waited in this long line to get up to customs. And when I was in Paris, I had bought some gifts to bring back to my parents and relatives, and so I bought some nice wine and some kind of expensive French cheese. And the cheese had been cool the whole time in the hotel room, but now in this hot airport with the flight delayed, it was beginning to stink. And there was this smell. My luggage smelled like my luggage had farted. It was just this smell was emanating from my bag. And so we finally, and I'm worried about it, of course, and I get up to the customs guy, and the customs man is a typical French fellow. He kind of had his nose up a little bit, and he sniffs the air in just the perfect way and goes, "Do you have anything to declare besides the cheese?"
That's funny. And
so, you know, that obviously was just, that should have been funny. But at the time, I was just so worried about, is he going to take me into some back room? And, you know, I'm going to miss my plane and I'm feeling bad and all this. And I was like trying to not yell at the guy because I was so mad. And it wasn't until like 4 or 5 hours later, I'm on the plane. We're like halfway across the Atlantic. We're about 1,000 miles away from France. And I'm sitting on the plane and I go, "Do you have anything to declare besides the cheese?" And I just start cracking up on the plane. People looking and be like, "Why is that man laughing at nothing?" You know, but that's just an example of how even when something happens in real time, you know, you really should find it funny. But sometimes it's hard. It's hard to see the humor in even the stupidest things when they happen to you.
Yeah, and maybe years later you would say that to Caroline. "Do you have anything to declare besides the cheese?" And then that'll be a moment of laughter.
Yeah, it is. It's sort of an inside joke between us at this point.
I love that. That's hysterical. So considering our situation now, how do you keep it light? I know it's been tough for you and tough for your parents. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it has. You know, it's hard to find humor during a pandemic, obviously, and there's really nothing funny about the pandemic itself. But there are things kind of that are tangentially associated with it that are pretty funny when you actually think about them. And one of the areas I've been having some real problems is with masks. And I'm not going to get into like the political things of should you wear a mask or not. I don't mean that. I mean, just the actual process of putting on a mask and going out with a mask. It's pretty weird. And there's a bunch of things that they don't tell you. We have all these experts on TV telling us about the bug and how it works and that you should do this and you should do that and how to distance and all these things. But nobody tells you the obvious thing. They should have a guy get up there and tell you. First thing is, if you wear glasses and you put on a mask, your glasses will immediately fog up and you will bump into people. You'll bump into walls. So be forewarned. You won't be able to see anything if you wear glasses and a mask. But nobody told me this. So the first time I went to a supermarket, I put the thing on. I'm like, okay, here we go. I'm ready. You know, and then I'm like knocking cans off the shelves and stuff because I can't see anything. So nobody, I don't know why they don't. Why didn't one of these experts tell us about this? Did nobody actually test this out with glasses? But anyway, but I actually like wearing a mask, and I'll tell you why. It allows me to indulge in something that I've always wanted to do all of my life. I've wanted to do, but never felt like I could do in public. And now I can do it just because I have a mask on. And that is to walk around just talking to myself and muttering to myself about anything that's annoying without people having any idea I'm doing it. So again, right. I'm back in the supermarket and there's somebody coming at me too fast with a cart or somebody who's in my way. Before, I would just have to kind of just bear it. But now with the mask on, no one can see my mouth moving. So I can just go, "You're too slow. Get out of my way." And you can just mutter and nobody thinks you're crazy or anything. You can just mutter to yourself as much as you want with this thing. So I kind of like that. I hope that there's something like that that you can wear in the future that just allows people to not be able to see that your mouth is moving in public.
I like that. I actually have thought about that too, because sometimes I do talk to myself and then I realize, oh my gosh, somebody probably saw me, but now with the mask, I don't have to worry about it. That's really funny.
It's a good added feature.
Yeah.
Blue Sea Care provides comprehensive care management to seniors and their families. Services include complete physical care for seniors who want to maintain their independence and state of health. The caregiving is combined with Art to Wellness, a program which uses the therapeutic benefits of the arts to assist with cognitive care for seniors. You can learn more about Blue Sea Care's programs at www.blueseacare.com.
So, can you share about situations that you were in that were difficult and upsetting and how you saw the humor in them? I guess you did talk about that a little bit. I know that I know it's a sore subject, but how did you find humor? And if you didn't, that's okay. But I know that you had, you know, treated yourself to a nice new car after you had finished Toy Story 2. and it was stolen right under your nose. And did you ever find humor in that at all?
You know, that one was kind of tough to find the humor in. This woman had broken up with me and I felt bad about it. And so I did what any guy does when a woman breaks up with her. He's like, I'm going to go buy a cool car, you know, like that'll somehow fix it all. So I had a really nice car and then it got ripped off, one night out of my garage. It had a club on it and it had low jack and all those things that they tell you will work. And somebody was, I guess it was like basically the Joker, you know, or the Penguin or somebody was a mastermind and got in there and stole the car. I don't really remember being able to find humor in that. But actually there have been times in my life that have been much more traumatic than that, because that was kind of only lasted a short period of time. But one of the like periods where I really felt overwhelmed was when my wife and I moved to England. You know, you mentioned earlier on that we were in England and I was there for 3 years as a lecturer, and I mostly have good memories of England, some, a lot of wonderful people there and some neat places. But for a while, especially when we first got there, I was just slammed. I got overwhelmed because after about 2 or 3 weeks of living there, you realize, wait a minute, I'm not on vacation. You know, all these little quirky things that are cute when you're on vacation, they start to drive you nuts because you realize you're not living where you used to live and nothing quite works the right way. And then I began to feel sort of stuck. I missed my family and friends. I got homesick. And then the 2008 economic crash happened while we were there too, and that made everything worse, especially for my wife. And so there was a certain point at which it just kind of hit rock bottom. And I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to go to some place that reminds me of home, even if it's kind of cheesy. I'm going to go to a McDonald's and just get a Big Mac and all that stuff. I'm not a giant fan of McDonald's in general, but in England, I'll take what I can get, right? Yeah. So they do have McDonald's over there. So I go into this McDonald's, just sort of, I'm going to drown my sorrows in a Coke and a big fat burger and the biggest fries I can get. So I order this hamburger, and the girl, there's like a teenage girl behind the counter who looks like she just hates every aspect of life, including all the customers that she has to deal with. So she hands me the burger and I take a bite of it. I sit down, I take a bite of it, and it clearly is like bone dry. It doesn't have hardly an ounce of ketchup or mustard on it. And I like a good deal of ketchup, and they don't have ketchup packets just sitting out there like they do in America. Mm-hmm. So I go back to the counter and I'm thinking I had to ask this girl for more ketchup. And I know in England, you're not supposed to complain, you know, and in America, you probably heard the phrase, the customer is always right. You know, you've probably heard that. Well, in England, the customer is always wrong. Their attitude over there is, I'm running this shop and you are lucky that I have this shop to serve you. So you shut up and take whatever I give you and keep a stiff upper lip and no complaining, even if it's in the mildest way. Well, I didn't quite realize that at the time. So I go up there and I say, and it's the nicest way I can. I say, I'm sorry, would you mind terribly if I had just a bit more ketchup on this? And I thought, well, that sounds very British the way I worded it. So this woman takes the top off the bun, looks at it, and she goes, there's enough on there, and hands it back to me.
Oh my gosh.
And I let fly like Mussolini from the balcony. I went crazy. I just lost it. And I'm saying, no, you listen to me. As far be it for me to tell people in England how they should run their businesses, but when I'm in a McDonald's, I am on American soil. So this might as well be the U.S. Embassy as far as I'm concerned, and I need more ketchup on this thing. So I just kind of let fly until she put the ketchup on. And about a week later, it just all seemed so ridiculous. You know, at the time, I was obviously really upset. But after a while, even while I was still in England, I'm like, that was just insane. That whole thing made no sense. And but sometimes what they say is that comedy, this is sort of pompous sounding, but I've heard people say comedy equals tragedy plus time. And I guess the worse the situation, the longer time you need before it starts to look ridiculous. But in the case of England, that, you know, for quite a while, I felt just overwhelmed. And looking back on it, I'm able to see that if I had only been like that Buddhist monk who could just laugh at it in real time, it would have been so much more fun to be immersed in this different culture like that.
Right, right.
There's another, I can give you one more example if you want, sure, of that kind of thing. So another area in which it was a difficult situation for me was my And again, my wife was involved. Our forays into real estate. We did some real estate investing where, you know, they teach you how to buy houses and fix them up and all that kind of stuff. And like many people who get into that, it did not work out so well. First of all, we had the wonderful timing of getting into it in the fall of 2007, which was just before everything cracked, right? So just before everything went down to you know what. So we wound up with this owning some of this real estate and these not very good neighborhoods in Kansas City, and you name it, it went wrong. In fact, things went wrong that you could never name, and it just piled up more and more. So just for example, so we had a tenant who didn't want to pay his utility bills, so he had been stealing electricity from his neighbor by running one of those long orange cords to the neighbor's house. Mm-hmm. And when the neighbor and the electric company found out, they turned off his electricity. So instead of just paying his electric bill or talking to us or whatever, he went and got a generator, a gasoline powered generator, and he hid it under the wooden deck. We had an outdoor deck, and he hid it under the wooden deck, and he had it running there, and it started a fire and burned the deck down. So we get these calls from our property managers, you know, saying, "Oh, now your deck is burned down. What do you want to do now?" So there was that, and then a different tenant stopped paying their rent, and they also stopped paying their gas bill. So the gas company eventually turned off the gas in this house. And then the person moved out, and the gas company said, "Well, you have to pay their gas bill. Somebody has to pay this gas bill." They left. And on Tuesday, we're going to turn the gas off. And this is in the middle of winter. And if they turn the gas off, that means within about 2 days, your pipes freeze and burst. And then you have to replace all the pipes in the house.
Right.
So this was going on. And then right about that time, we had a tenant who moved out of another house, and they had left the dog they had a dog living in the basement, and the dog had left doggy do all over the basement. So when they moved out, the man who puts the alarm in the house, he refused to install the alarm because the basement was disgusting. And because he refused to do that, someone broke into the house, stole the furnace, the air conditioning, and then took some of the pipes out of the walls. And then the last thing was, so I'm thinking, what could possibly happen next? So our manager calls him and says, "Well, I got a new one for you." "Like, what?" He says, "There was a car that was parked on a hill, and it became a runaway. It became a runaway car, and the car went zooming down the hill, and it smashed into your house."
Oh my gosh!
So I'm like, "Are you trying to make these things up?" It's taken me that was such a bad period. It's taken me years to see the humor of that. But a few years later, some guy who I don't know calls me up. And he says, "You know, you don't know me, but I'm working with your old property manager, and he recommended you as somebody who might give me some advice. I want to learn how to make money in real estate. And, you know, can you give me any advice?" Mm-hmm. So I said, "Yes, I have some advice. The way to make money in real estate is when a runaway car hits your house, make sure that it's owned by a doctor or a CEO." And I was that was about the only thing I could tell the guy, because, you know, at that point, yeah, I'm thinking this entire thing has to be viewed as a giant kind of a joke.
Yeah. Just like, what is that, Money Pit, or
yeah,
you know, that show? Yeah.
Mr. Blandings builds his dream house.
Oh,
yeah,
my
the Money Pit.
Yeah. I've seen it about 5-6 times, and I laugh every time. It's hysterical where he takes a bath and he falls through the floor. There is a lot in real life that can be very humorous. I know that you and Caroline wrote a book, and it's interesting because it's not even funny, because you were saying that, you know, of that trail, half of it was affected by the Woolsey fire. And but I know that in that book, you have some little humorous bits and pieces. Can you talk about the humor in writing a book about a hiking trail? Because I also have seen books, like there's a book for Kauai, and they put their own sense of humor in it, which is very nice.
Yeah, I know what you mean about that Kauai book. I think I've read that. It's like slightly smart alecky. It's mm-hmm. got a little bit of attitude to it. And right. We didn't want to go overboard making jokes in a what's essentially a hiking guide. Obviously, people don't really read those because they want to laugh. They want to know where to find the trailhead and how long is the hike. And so we really tried to stick mostly to that. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't help but throw a couple little quips in there. I don't remember too many of them. I do remember one little thing. There's a hike. One of the hikes is called Hondo Canyon, and Hondo is Spanish for deep, and it is a deep canyon. So we just threw a little quip in there that said, please don't call it Honda Canyon. It's not named after your car, you know, just because people get confused stuff. So there's a couple of little tiny chuckles in there. But we really, when I was doing that, I was really just kind of aiming more towards helping people enjoy themselves when they're getting out and enjoying nature. And the reason that we did the book at all is because that trail, even though it's a wonderful long trail, it has a lot of confusing intersections and unmarked junctions and people are constantly getting lost, including myself and my wife when we first hiked it.
Right.
We got lost all the time.
It's a nice trail, and it's one of the most popular trails in the world. I mean, it's world renowned. People from all over the world come to hike that trail, and it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful.
It is. It's a neat place. Yeah.
So let's see. As a humorist, I'm guessing that you're the type of person who always sees the glass half full. Am I correct?
No, I'm sorry. I think that's probably not correct about me.
Oh, shit.
I try to keep a positive attitude, but that doesn't mean that, like, down inside that I'm a half full kind of guy. It depends on the person. I think people who focus on humor can be either the half full or the half empty kind of person. In my case, I've always sort of noticed problems. I always basically approach life, even as a little kid, with the attitude of everything should be just fine. Everything should be just perfect. And then you're constantly going, why isn't it? You know, why is that messed up? Why is that weird? Why is that odd? So that's the way I view it. But I mean, the half full kind of person, I think, can also find a lot of joy in life too. It comes down to basically whether you, let me put it this way. I got into a conversation one time back when I was in England, a conversation with one of the other lecturers there, mm-hmm. about when a person laughs at something, is that a positive or a negative thing? In other words, are you going, ha ha, you know, I'm putting you down. You got hurt in some way or another. I got put down in some way and I didn't. And is it sort of mean spirited, or is it a positive thing? Are you sort of, finding the joy in odd things in life? And so she said that she thought that it was about having empathy. In other words, when you laugh, even at some real misfortune from some other character, that you're really saying, I understand, I've been there too. You know, that kind of, I've been embarrassed like that, or I've been hurt or stuck or frustrated or whatever it is. I've been there too. And I argued that it's a little more of, it's a slightly more pointed view, which is, I'm glad that's not happening to me. I'm glad it's happening to you. And whew, thank goodness that's not happening to me. But really, those are really just kind of two sides of the same coin. They're very close to each other. And it just sort of depends on if you have more empathy for the person or whether you feel a bit more detached from them.
Yeah, a lot of times is you can relate. You can relate. So that's why you see the humor in it, because you've had the same thing happen to you.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I just remember.
Either way, you get to relate to it.
Yeah. And sometimes you have to laugh at yourself, because if you can't laugh at yourself, it makes life difficult, especially when you make a lot of mistakes like me in conversation. So I remember a few years back, I was telling my colleagues at work that my sister had a pet bugle instead of beagle, you know, a pet bugle. And they she has a pet bugle. And I said, oh, no, I meant pet beagle. And so, you know, if I don't think about it, I'll say the wrong thing sometimes. And so I work closely with the art department. So one of the guys came and had a drawing of a dog with a horn coming out of his snout. And he says, did it look kind of like this? I said, yeah, that's it. It looked exactly like that. So,
you know, people can have pet rocks, they can have pet bugles, as far as I'm concerned.
See, right, exactly. So, you know, if you want to have a pet bugle, you can. So that's funny. Now, speaking of pets, how has having a pet changed your lives with your sweet, sweet puppy dog?
We recently adopted a little doggy about a year and a half ago, and that has changed our lives, definitely for the better. I mean, this is a very silly little dog too. He will almost always make us laugh. Just because everything is terribly serious to him. He's very small. He's a half Lhasa Apso, half Shih Tzu. So he's a real small little guy, and everything is a major deal, almost maybe even a crisis to this guy. But you know, we can just watch it and go, really, that's what you're all upset about? So I think to this guy, his worries are, you know, what if I don't get beef for supper tonight? What if Doug goes into the shower and then he never comes out and I never see him again? Yeah, just oh no, they're doing the laundry again. I hate it when they do the laundry. I'm going to hide under the bed. So he's just everything is some sort of a worry to this poor little guy. But it's really cute because you just watch him and go, don't you realize that none of this is worth worrying about? You have a pretty cush life, little guy.
Yeah.
I've noticed something though. I've fallen prey to a problem from adopting this dog, and I call it cute doggy creep. So I'll explain what that means. So,
okay.
Some of your listeners may be familiar with the different terms that end with the word creep, or maybe they haven't. What I mean is like price creep or lifestyle creep. So price creep, just for example, is like if you ever sign up for something like cable or cable TV or some sort of utility, and they tell you it'll be $50 a month, and you agree to that, and then the next month it's $50.25, and then the next bill after that is $50.70, and it keeps going up and just slowly keeps creeping up until one day you notice you're paying $8,000 a month for cable. That's called price creep. And then lifestyle creep is similar in that when you're younger, you're happy with just, you know, nothing but a mattress on the floor and big dreams in your heart, you know, but then you get a better job, you make more money, and then suddenly you have to have a nicer car. And then when you have the nicer car, you have to get a better job to pay for that. And it just keeps going on and on. And pretty soon you're spending $12,000 a month on your rent and you don't know how this happened. So that's an example of lifestyle creep. So I found something new, which is called cute doggy creep. So if you get a really cute little dog, and you'll have to picture what our dog looks like, but he's a cute little pup. Yes. When you get this I think applies mainly to men also, although it's not exclusive to men. But when you first agree to get a cute little dog, you say, well, I'm not going to be one of these guys who is out there, you see, you know, pushing the dog in a baby carriage or carrying him around like he's like his little child and calling him who's my little schmoopy whoopy and feeding him little nuggets of beef and insisting that he come into the restaurant with him and all that. I'm not going to turn into one of those people. And the little dog slowly whittles your will down. Just as the months go by, you begin to acquiesce more and more and agree to, this one time I'll put a little sweater on him because it is cold outside. And I, if he got sick, that would be terrible. So, okay, we'll put the sweater on him, you know, and then a couple of months later, it's raining out. Okay. Well, I don't want to be a guy walking a dog with little booties on him, but he is going to get wet and he's going to track the mud on the house. So, all right, if no one's looking, I'll put the little booties on him. Pretty soon you have this fur baby, you know, that you're coddling and singing little songs to in public. And then one day you suddenly realize, you look around and go, what happened to me? How did I get here? I turned into one of those people with the cute dog. So I've fallen prey to cute doggy creep at this point.
Yes. And I do remember you bringing him with you when we went to the restaurant and we sat out on the patio so you could bring him.
Yeah, that's a good example.
Just starting to adjust, the poor baby. But I can totally relate because we've got two precious little felines and they make us laugh and they bring us so much joy. And little Anastasia, poor little thing, she's afraid of everything. So like you say, you know, are they never going to come out? Or what was that big truck coming by? I'm going to have to hide in the back of the house. There's a firecracker. I've got to go find the darkest corner to hide in. And so it's so sweet and you just want to do everything for them. So I do understand that, but it's great to have a pet. They give you comfort. They give you joy. And I highly recommend it. Even if you fostered a pet, would be wonderful, you know, for our listeners out there. So now you've got elderly parents, and how are they doing? I know they moved into independent living for seniors, do you get your sense of humor from them? And, you know, I know you've told me some stories about your dad and driving and their travels. Do you mind sharing a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. My folks are doing fine. They're almost 90, they're 88 and 89, but you know, the thing is, when you're 89 years old, you might as well just tell people I'm practically 90, you know, telling someone that you're 89 and a half is there's a hint of disappointment. It's like, oh, call me back when you're 90. That's really impressive. So I just like telling people that they're practically 90.
Yeah, that's great.
And I had so many laughs from being with them, and not necessarily because they were the ones making jokes, just by being around them, especially as a kid, you're constantly noticing, like, why are you doing that? You know, this is just, everything is wrong in this house. Right. So that was always the way my sister and I viewed everything. And I was just working on a piece a couple of days ago, which is far from finished, but reminiscing about the time when I was a teenager and I was out in driving around with my mom and dad, and my Aunt Ruth, for some reason, was with us. So the four of us were driving around out in the mountains on a vacation, and I was in the back seat. And it was just nothing but woods for a long time, and Aunt Ruth started saying, look, I'm sorry, but I really got to stop and use the restroom pretty soon. But there was no restroom. There were no amenities up there. So finally, we drive by the entrance to some campground. And so Dad says, okay, well, we'll just pull in there for a second and you can just run in. Hopefully no one will even notice. We'll just act like we're maybe going to pull in there and you can use the ladies' room. So we stop right by the camp office and she runs into the ladies' room. And unfortunately, immediately the manager comes hurrying out of the office and he thinks we want to maybe check in. So Dad doesn't want to just look at the guy and say, sorry, but, my sister is using your restroom. So, you know, we don't want to stay here. He wants to save face. So he starts trying to act like he's thinking about maybe camping there, but he wants to see if they have the right amenities. You know, so to save face, he starts like asking this guy about, do they have this amenity and do they have that amenity? But no matter what he asked, the guy just kept saying, yes, we have that. So he's like, well, do you have pull pew spaces? Yes, we do. Water hookups? Yes. Sewer hookups? Yes, we do. Electrical? Cable TV? Yes, we do. Do you have a camp store? Yes, we do, sir. And no matter what he asked, this place had it. So Dad's starting to sweat because he's struggling to think of, he's running out of things to ask the guy about while we're waiting for Aunt Ruth to come out of the bathroom. Do you have a fishing hole? Yes. Yeah. Does it have canoes? Yes. Rowboats? Do you have kayaks? Yes, we do. You have kayaks? And cars are lining up behind us trying to get in. And I, you know, at this point, he's like, help me out here. And the rest of us in the car chiming in. How about tetherball? How about shuffleboard? Do you have mini golf? Do you have a zip line? Yes, we do. I'm like, you have a zip line? I'm starting to think this is the greatest campground ever. I want to come back and stay in this place. They have everything you can think of. And where the heck is Aunt Ruth? Was she like reading War and Peace in there or something? So, and he's like, dining hall? Do you have a pancake breakfast? Yes, we do. So finally, Aunt Ruth hurries out of the restroom and hops in the back seat. And now Dad, he can't leave until he happens to stumble upon some amenity that they don't have to save face. So he's like, well, you have a weekend entertainment? Yes. Yeah, I have a barn dance? Yes, we do. Does it have a guy playing a banjo in it? Yes, we have a man with a banjo. And I'm trying not to laugh in the back seat. To me, the whole thing is hysterical. So he's in his home stretch. Do you have a pool? Yes. Is it Olympic-sized pool? Yes. Do you have a diving board? Yes, we do. Do you have a slide? Yes, we have a slide. Is it a curved slide? The guy goes, well, no, sir. It's just a straight slide. That's, oh, sorry. We wanted a curved slide. And he burns rubber out of there. Even after he left, Dad was really just annoyed about it. Like, I can't believe that guy had everything we wanted. I just thought it was hilarious, though, because, you know, it wasn't my problem. I was able to laugh at it from the back seat.
That's a great story. A great story. So your parents are doing well. I know they're kind of secluded, and they went to the independent living so that they could have a social outlet with other seniors, but right now they cannot socialize, right?
That's right. You know, they moved into that place thinking they'll be meeting a bunch of new friends, and they moved in. The timing was not so great. They moved in about a week before California locked down. And so since then they've been making the best of it. They're just hanging out in their cottage, and people are delivering food to their door, you know, but they're not able to go out at all. So not the greatest timing, but everybody's trying to make the best of it.
Well, good. So as we wrap up, do you have any favorite quotes that you live by or favorite sayings that you really
I do
like to share?
My favorite quote, and for years it's been my favorite quote in life, and it comes from the person I get most of my best wisdom from, Bugs Bunny. So Bugs Bunny, and I don't know if he came up with this, but he's the only person I've ever heard say it. And it is what it is don't take life too seriously. You'll never get out of it alive.
Oh, that's cute. That's cute. My dad loved Bugs Bunny, so I like that. That's good.
You can hardly go wrong quoting Bugs Bunny, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Well, thanks so much, Doug. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we say goodbye for now?
Well, I just want to say thank you thanks to you, Francine, for doing this nice interview. It's been fun.
Oh, great. Well, you're welcome. And I'm sure that our audience is going to really enjoy this. So have a great afternoon.
Okay, you too. Thanks.
Thank you. Take care.